Yeah, the Bitcoin next 2.0, is it a soft fork or a hard fork? Is it a split or is it,
So
an upgrade?
I'm not technical. I'm not technical, but Dr. Carlos Matos, he said that it was like a middle fork. So it's not too soft, not too hard. You know when it's just right. You can touch it and it's right. Not too soft, not too hard. Perfect. I would call it a perfect
Reckless
fork.
Review, the authentic podcast by Toxic Bitcoin Maximalists for Toxic Bitcoin Maximalists. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Reckless Review, episode 27, or 5. I think it's 5 or 27, one of them.
No, no, it's 6. It's just that the last one was very technical and we didn't joke a lot and it feels like 5 again.
Okay, so it's somewhere between 5 and 27.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, great. And today we have a very special guest. We kind of like the idea of having guests. So we get a very special guest again.
Pedro.
His name is Pedro McCormack.
Yes.
Hello,
hello,
Pedro.
Everybody. Hello, hello. Thank you for inviting me. As you can hear from my accent, I'm British Mexican. I'm one of the two Pedro McCormack out there. People is a little bit confused about how many of us are there. So I'm here to educate everybody about the fact that we are two. And I mean, I'm not necessarily the real one, but I'm learning, you know. I still didn't decide. I'm very open-minded about me being the real one or him. So I'm super happy to be here. Actually, I know that this is episode 6 of your review. And everybody is, on Twitter is talking about episode 6. So I'm assuming they are talking about Reckless Review, right?
Yeah, probably.
Or Game of Thrones, or some of the two, or Game of Thrones or Reckless Review.
Do you watch Game of Thrones?
Well, I mean, there are several of them. I'm not sure which one is the true one. I mean, one has on-chain dragon, and the other doesn't. So I'm sympathizing toward the first. So we're just learning. I don't know. The one I like is made by Indian people and from India, and they have this dragon made of paper. But it's okay. I'm not toxic. I'm not a maximalist. So much hatred just to say that there are two shows. So it's okay.
Can you believe I never watched either of them?
Ah, because you are no watcher. You're no watcher. Huh? Yeah.
Not troner, to be honest.
Not troner. Okay.
Yes.
So you've been watching, are there like two Game of Thrones or like many infinite Game of Thrones? How many Game of Thrones are there?
Well, answering will mean actually that I'm straight about it, one sentence, and I don't like that. I don't like to be straight about one concept. So I will answer changing the topic entirely. For example, right now I want to, many people in the pubs ask me about Bitcoin. So as you know, there are two Bitcoins. One is Bitcoin Core and one is Bitconnect. And the second Bitcoin, Bitconnect, is coming out with the 2.0 version very, very soon. And Bitcoin Core is without daily compound interest. That's a technical choice. And Bitcoin Next has a daily compound interest of 5%. So there is this professor, Carlos Matos, and I'm getting a lot of flack for inviting him. But I think that we have to hear all voices, all sides of the story.
Well, we need to learn. We need to educate ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Let's learn together. I mean, people is especially asking me for information when they want to learn, when they don't know anything. And so I think that that exposing them to Carlos Matos is the most intellectually honest thing I can do.
Well, he's an academic, so he probably knows
sure,
what he's talking
sure.
about.
Sure, and he's getting a lot of flack for his, open-mindedness and intellectual freedom. You have to think that his wife was convinced that he was a scammer. Like, his wife was a maximalist. Like, no, that's a scam. But Carlos is not easily stopped by this kind of closed-mindedness. So Carlos continued. He went on with open-mindedness and debate. And I'm so proud of it.
Yeah, but also, I heard you haven't changed the policy of your guest or, who you invite since, and that you haven't made money for a year.
Yeah, I invested so much that right now, I didn't quit my day job of flat earth geologist. and I still do that for a living. But I decided to spend all the money I do as a flat earth geologist in order to sponsor my Bitcoin Core and Bitcoin Next double Bitcoin show.
Why just two Bitcoins? That's what because we're Reckless of You is a very open minded show, right? We're open to all the coins. And you talk about two coins, like Bitcoin and Bitcoin Next. What about all the others?
Guys, now you're being overly technical, please. normal people is easily confused. So you cannot ask normal people to count to three. Newbies, they are disoriented, they're confused, they want to learn. You cannot expose them with numbers like three, four. That's absolutely, that's technical snobbism. You are a technical snob, Udi. Let's talk about one, Bitcoin Core, which is, I mean, it's my favorite. I only own Bitcoin Core. And then there is Bitcoin Next with 5% daily compound interest, which is, a totally legit technical choice. And then we cannot go deeper because that will alienate. Guys, you are disconnected from reality. The people in real life, they don't count to three. They only count to two, please. Be real for a moment.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We can't remember the names of three coins. But what happens? Okay, I understand. BitConnect is like 5% daily interest. It makes sense. But what happens if some people in the BitConnect community want 10% and then they split BitConnect into two coins? Then we have a problem.
But first I have a question.
Sure. Everyone wants to know, but okay.
Yeah, the Bitcoin Next 2.0, is it a soft fork or a hard fork? Is it a split or is it, an upgrade?
I'm not technical, but Dr. Carlos Matos, he said that it was like a middle fork. So it's not too soft, not too hard. You know, when it's just right, you can touch it and it's right. Not too soft, not too hard. Perfect. I would call it a perfect fork, actually.
Finally, a perfect fork. Finally.
Yeah. So, but I'm not taking sides here. So I want to be clear. I'm just a journalist. So please let me expose the facts, and then you will decide when you discuss about applied cryptography in a pub with your friends. Will decide.
Which websites do you take your facts from?
Don't be snobbish. I don't use websites. I go to the pub and people tell me websites are for nerds. I'm for normal people, for simple people, just pubs, not websites. That would be so, restrictive.
Pubs, so more than one.
Oh, two, actually, yeah. they have the same name. Sometimes we are confused, especially when you are drunk, because they use the same name, same logo. It's all about intellectual openness. So, we enter here, we enter there, and we will see. The market will decide.
What about messages from listeners? Do you sometimes get messages from listeners who tell you what they want to know about?
No, they're all about supporting because they understand better now. They were confused before about the number of pubs, Game of Thrones, and Bitcoins, and now finally they know everything. I think that this Reckless Review will help them as well. I think that after this, a lot of noobs will be very able to take informed decision about their finances.
But we don't really take many messages, do we, Udi?
We no, not at all. Only GIFs. We only get GIFs, GIF files,
donations.
Yeah.
Oh, anonymous. Give donations. That's great. That's great. You deserve it, guy. Because we're a friend, right? We're a friend here.
We're friends. Yes, we're among friends.
That's great. Thank you.
I'm very impressed by your British accent, by the way.
Mexican British accent. Or are you talking about
British
me
Mexican?
Now?
Yes. Larry is British.
No. You're Mexican too?
No.
I'm coming from London, not the one you think about, the one in Mexico. The other London. Differences mostly for experts of urbanistic design, so they're not so important. But this one is closer to Città del Messico, and it's great. We have pudding and enchilada.
So I know it's a technicality, but I have a a third London.
No, it's guys, if you go on with these technicalities, I will probably leave the show. I mean, I'm for real people. Please try to connect with the real people.
Oh man, last time I connected people, they blocked each other.
Yeah, this happens blocking a lot.
It's terrible. I mean, if you block somebody, it's because you're threatened, you're scared. There are a lot of my fellow geologists block me after I explained the flat earth theory because they are threatened by my theory. They're scared. That's a clear sign of weakness.
Well, they just can't accept that there's both a round earth and a flat earth. There's both.
Yeah. Because their career depends
on it. Again, the third kind, it's a concave earth.
No, again, you're with the three. You can't have three. Yeah. Three is too complex. You can only have the first two.
With theories, it's a bit different, I would expect. You can have more than two.
The point is that you don't understand that I'm a scam exposer, and I want to expose the fraud, which is the Dr. Hollow-Heart theorist, which is a scammer. I mean, people from the Flat Earth Society are completely legit, but this particular guy from the Hollow Earth Society, he's a scammer, and I asked him to sue me. So you see, I'm a good guy. I can fight scammers like you. We are doing the same job.
Yeah. Oh, like us.
That's called the Earth Satoshi. No, Satoshi is not correct. Original geologist vision. That's another theory, and I don't like that.
You don't like
it? Yeah, this is...
Because it's the third theory.
Exactly. I don't like it. I can count to two. It's getting more and more convoluted as a meeting.
I'm not sure anyone follows by this stage. I'm not sure. Okay, I'm going to reveal now that Pedro is actually Giacomo.
No.
Oh.
Yes.
This plot twist, not this fucking game.
Well, probably our listeners already know because it's in the title. But... I suspect that most of our listeners don't have any idea what's going on. They're just, our listeners basically clicked the button by accident. So we can't expect them to know anything about the show.
Yeah, exactly. Also because I think Lawrence was telling me that you acquired the domain pornhub.org in order to redirect to your domain, which is completely legit. I mean, people searching for reckless for Pornhub, they get the redirect to Reckless Review. That's a legit commercial practice,
yeah,
I guess.
It's actually pornhub.cash. That's the domain name.
There's two of them.
Yeah.
Well, finance, risk.
Yes, okay. Risk and finance. So listen, so we're settled that there are a lot of Bitcoins, but... Okay, we don't think that, I mean, I don't know about you two, because I never asked you, but I guess I don't think that there's more than one Bitcoin. But some people do. I mean, this is real. Some people really think that. So, you can talk to someone and they'll tell you, it's not a lot of people, but some people, and they'll say, yeah, Bcash and Bitcoin, they're like two legitimate competitors. So why do you say to someone like that?
In all seriousness, I will tell them to start counting over two because it's more fun when you can get to count real natural numbers. If you can, you can list Bitcoin and Bitcoin clones. If you list Bitcoin clones, you get over 2000, something like that. And if you select all the Bitcoin clones that have Bitcoin in the name, you probably can arrive to 10 or 20. And if you select the Bitcoin clones with Bitcoin in the name, which are sold to people using fraud, pretending they are Bitcoin, you can get to two, basically, which are
maybe three.
Bcash. Yeah, well, excluding the real Bitcoin.
Excluding Bitcoin Core.
Bitcoin Core, exactly. Or Bitcoin XA, I don't know the exact name. Probably Bitcoin XA is more correct.
Yeah.
Reptilian, Bitcoin Reptilian.
Yes.
I said it the other day. I think it's funny, but it's also a bit insulting.
Reptilian?
No, in general, it's Bitcoin, the network, the coin, the money, the value,
Yeah, I mean, the idea of calling the client core was, if I'm not mistaken, my current idea.
It was my current idea, suggestion. I don't think the name matters so much. It was called what? B Bitcoin QT before,
yeah.
or just Bitcoin, I'm not sure. Yeah. But in general, you know, Bitcoin node, call it whatever.
So I try to steel man a little bit. Since I was already a dick in this interview, I will continue. I will try now to steel man an objection. I'm not convinced myself. So you cannot call Bitcoin Core Bitcoin because Core is just one implementation. You can have Knot, you can have whatever, you can have LibBitcoin. But if there are implementation, I mean, sometimes Peter Todd says that it's good that there is just one very spread, widespread implementation because in case of incompatibility and bugs, at least you know which one to follow.
Right.
So can we define Bitcoin as the set of implementations which are in consensus with Bitcoin Core, which is still the reference implementation?
But is that what he's saying? Or is he saying that it's inevitable that you will have one implementation used by the majority? Like, let's try to look at this a few steps ahead of things, right? Let's think that there's a few accidents. There's a bunch of implementations. We start with, say, five, and they all get equal market share. And then over time, some have more issue than others. Some are easier to use than others. But basically, some become dominant. And maybe over a longer time, some have more issues than others. And I think ultimately, people will flock to the better one. So at that point, maybe you want to run multiple ones and stop everything going on if you notice some disagreement. But really, it's more foreseeable that people in general will follow the one that has the majority on it. So majority of the value will be in it. And if there's a consensus disagreement between the two implementations, are we going to have a rollback or are we going to have, are we all moved to one of the forks or are we just splitting and continuing our ways? No, I don't think that's the goal, right? The goal is, I guess, to converge back. So, it's not even about hard forks or anything like that. It's just about, reorging out the shorter chain making sure that they're compatible going forward, finding the bug and fixing it. And sometimes the point is precisely a bug. Like you have to implement bugs bug by bug the same way. And you don't even know about all of the bugs, clearly.
So we could say that there are several implementations of Bitcoin, which is defined by the set of rules. One very common implementation is Bitcoin Core right now. But the point is that there must be one network strong implementation, not necessarily this one. If Bitcoin Core fucks up too much, it's possible that the network can move to Knot or other implementations in theory.
Maybe, but
I guess it's possible in theory.
But Knot is it's a fork of Bitcoin Core with extra patches. So is AB Core and a few others. As you said, there's LibBitcoin and there's a BTCD. And there's another one in JavaScript, I believe. I'm not really experienced with that one. But there's at least, three or four, right?
And, yeah, the Go language one. And.
But right now, aren't we saying that... isn't it true that over 90% it's using the either QT or Core implementation?
Yeah, I think it's safe to assume that 99% of economic value is kind of backed by Bitcoin Core right now.
Right. So, what are the incentives to use another one from consensus risk perspective? Like, if there's a consensus disagreement, I don't think people are really gonna care that your implementation doesn't. It's wrong,
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're like in the 1% that use BTCD and it happens to have some bug, or maybe even, maybe Bitcoin Core is the bug, technically.
Yeah, but
everyone follows the bug, then
Yeah, exactly. Only if everybody follows the bug. For example, the inflation bug that we had in September, it's arguable that nobody would have followed infinite inflation on Bitcoin if exploited.
Right.
So if Bitcoin Core has a bug and Bitcoin in Go doesn't have the bug, it's possible that,
Well, at that point, it's such a bad bug that they'll fix it in either, right? Like, it's just if it's an inflation issue.
Yeah.
I mean, some people might lose money, but yeah.
Yeah, there are very two different scenarios. There is a scenario in which eventually you get to some kind of ossification of the base rules of the protocol. And in that scenario, it doesn't really matter if you have a single implementation, because as long as it works good enough as intended, while if you have to a continue process of changing the protocol for continuous improvement at the base layer, in that case, having one very strong implementation can be an attack surface, because then you can identify even if it's an informal group of developer, you can still try to impact using upgrade as an attack surface. If you don't upgrade very much, that's safe to have just the historical Bitcoin implementation.
But I think it's safe to assume that the rate of changes, consensus changes, or you know, features, it's going to be mostly built on top rather than changing the base logic. So you can still use a relatively old client and mostly be happy. Sure, you know, SegWit changed the things a lot, and Schnorr will also do. But and I can definitely not foresee what I can't foresee, and there will be more. But I think the rate that the pace will be a little bit different in terms of base layer changes. But yeah, I was thinking of the scenario you described, and let's say that there's enough by one in the block size. Not
every measure. I mean,
not the block height, a block size.
Okay.
So let's say that for whatever reason, Bitcoin Core screwed up, and we have an off by one byte issue, where either we accept, the largest block size is one byte too small or too big, whatever. And let's say something happened in the network, and occasionally some miner makes one of those blocks that it's valid for the other implementation because they follow the beep or the spec, but then the actual core implementation, screwed up and it's off by one, plus or minus. You know, what do you think is going to happen if, I'm not sure it's, even if we assume it's good to have multiple client implementations that are different, and I'm not talking about basic forks with minor changes, I'm talking about re-implementations. Even if we assume that's a good idea, how do we get there? Because I don't see that happening. I have zero incentives to use another implementation. Mm-hmm. It needs to be so much better. And I haven't seen anything so much better. But B, even if I find something so much better, it's still a big rift. So I would still put it behind core or behind the dominant. And at that point, I'm only, this is costing me. This is redundancy. This is costing me double the
space, bandwidth, and
whatever, the effort at least. And maybe I'm using it for the nice features like indexing and whatnot. But then I always argue that, it shouldn't be in the node itself. It should be something you build on top.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's interesting that it never really happened. I mean, historically, you have altcoins forking the UTXO like Bcash or Bgold or Bdiamond or Bprivate, all that stuff. But you don't have any kind of historical occurrence of an accidental split in the Bitcoin rules that was not explicitly designed in order to create an altcoin.
Accidental that was explicitly designed to create an altcoin?
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
It wasn't explicitly designed. We had
some forks. We had some splits. We just abandoned them.
Well, for example, these are other re-implementation like the JavaScript one, the Bitcoin, the Go language one. I don't think there are historical occurrences of them failing to replicate
consensus issues. No, they had.
They have, and people just ignored the consensus issue because they have core, right?
No, they fixed it.
Which one?
Sorry, I'm not.
I mean, like Go language Bitcoin implementation having consensus issues with core, and that being an issue for somebody, it never occurred because nobody's running them.
No, some people are running them, but they notice the issue and fix it. Probably nobody's relying on them from economical point of view.
Were there actual blocks mined that triggered the bug, or is it just theoretical?
Maybe those bugs were only found in the first year, or maybe they're still finding them. I wouldn't know. You would need to basically go there and dig and find, around issues and pull requests and commit history when and what happened. But
I mean, the thing is, in order to exploit this, you need the miner to actually create a block that would be invalid for Bitcoin Core, but valid for some other fork. So that costs money, you know, that's not a cheap attack. And if only like five people are using it, then maybe it's not worth it for an attacker.
But also, you need to know that the person you want to attack is the person that you want to, you know, that runs a specific version that you can exploit. Yeah.
Or that you are running a generic market attack in which you are selling something else, just like Bcash or other kind of fork coin.
Yeah. But that didn't, you know, look for a consensus bug. They created one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a leak consensus effort to insulate and limit the consensus part to a very small library to leave everything else free to change very easily. But that was a mess because if I understand it correctly, everything is consensus.
Yeah,
I mean,
size. It's really hard because it's really hard to determine what's going to affect consensus. I mean,
data storage affects consensus.
It's
if you have a bug in the number of inodes or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's hard to decide where the line goes. And also just refactor, even if you could decide where the line goes, that's a ton of like refactoring work to get there. And refactoring is not just expensive, it's also risky because you're essentially changing something that works, right? So
listen to the mood of this conversation, how sad it has become.
We should go back to BitConnect.
Yeah, with the daily compound interest, the mood is
5%.
Yeah, 5%. The mood is happy. Frisky is. We're very sad.
Well, Bitcoin topics are sometimes not very positive. That's true. Because we always think about attack vectors and things like that. So it's not very fun. It's a lot more fun to think about 5% daily.
Exactly. And also the predisposition of Bitcoiners to talk about attack vectors and to be adversarial thinking is that we, like me and my colleagues, we can pull a lot of attacks. I mean, we can promote shitcoins easily because if you want to give some kind of legitimization to a guy promoting Bcash, for example, you invite a real expert in a Lightning Network, and the real expert in Lightning Network, since he is a real expert, he will find tons of problems with Lightning Network because he will love to correct unrealistic expectations. He will love to manage expectations and assumptions and to cut the marketing and cut the bullshit to be real. So that would be a very good material in order to, if you can marry the sensible criticism of a real expert with the FUD and snake oil of a fake expert, that's a perfect mix to promote a scam coin.
That's a good idea. I can see that you spent some time thinking about this. I think you're working on something.
Yeah, and you immediately recognize the value.
Yeah.
Right? My money. Yeah.
Thank you, Pedro.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's it's a duty. You know, I'm a journalist.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Yeah, moral duty.
I'm not sure when are you a journalist and when are you not a journalist. I mean, am I a journalist because I sometimes shit post on Twitter? Does that make me a journalist? People sometimes send me like mail, snail mail. Are they journalists?
So the consensus rule here is when you have some responsibility to do your homework, then you are not a journalist. You are just having fun. while when you want to protect your intellectual freedom to never take a side and to just stay on the surface, then you are a journalist and you are sacred and you cannot be criticized.
It's called being neutral.
Yeah, exactly.
And objective.
Exactly.
But you're not objective because you sued the person with the concave earth, or he's suing you.
No, he's suing us. They are suing us. You know, there are two Craig Wright, actually. One was in our office. Do you remember, Lawrence? One is Canadian. Is called Craig Wright. And he did an interview with my wife He's the second Craig Wright.
Isn't he the first Craig Wright?
Oh, maybe he's the first. Yeah, he's
the real Craig Wright.
Yeah, he's the real Craig Wright. You're right. He also signed a Craig Wright PGP key during a meetup.
So he has to be Craig Wright.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And what about the other one?
Oh, the other one is, I mean, I'm not taking sides here. The other one is different. If you want, I mean, that's the on-chain compliant low-risk finance version of Craig Wright. The other one is the Canadian one. He's dodgy. I think he wants to help criminals and drug dealers. And our Craig Wright is all about law, introducing law.
Yeah,
friend of society.
Yeah, absolutely. He was busting drug lords in South America. You know,
with his own hands.
Sure. He studied, I think, 62 martial arts and. Like, you know, post law, it's difficult to tell if I'm doing a parody or telling the truth. But this is actually what he said, that he knows like different martial arts, and he was fighting in the jungle to bust drug lords.
You know who else in the jungle right now?
Who else? What?
So McAfee and his wife. Yes. Apparently they. Back in the jungle.
Yeah, McAfee is the that level of scamminess where I really stop. I mean, who is falling for McAfee is beyond help anyway, so I don't feel the moral responsibility to help him. And McAfee at least is really is consistently entertaining.
Yes, style.
Yeah, yes, style. If you have to be a scammer, you should be at least an artist like McAfee. So I respect him. That's more entertainment. And being scammed by a scam coin or a shitty hardware wallet sold by McAfee is like paying an overpriced ticket to the cinema, to the movie theater. It's entertainment, and you get what you see.
Yeah. So who wins in a boxing match, McAfee or Craig Wright, the Australian Craig Wright?
McAfee will win.
Yeah, McAfee will win. But if McAfee is fighting against both Craig Wrights. So maybe the Canadian one can stop McAfee from
I can see that. I can see
A combo.
Yeah,
like,
it's gonna be very hard to coordinate between the Canadian and the Australian Craig Wright, because they don't trust each other. One has large blocks, the other has small blocks. It's difficult to coordinate block size.
Maybe they are working together. You think they are adversarial, but that would be the best way for them to proceed. Especially the Canadian one, I don't trust him. He's always appear very, very sketchy to me. Very, very.
Wasn't he the one that signed the GPG key during the meetup?
Yeah, exactly. Who does that, right? that's a very strange move. That's suspect. Also, he's selling these scams like, Prove Marshall, and this cannot be real. Like
He said, I got him a drink. He said he'll get me back a drink later. And later, you know, there was no drink.
It disappeared. Exit scam.
No drink.
Exit scam.
On a spritz.
Oh, come on.
So, like, you didn't do that on a spritz, right?
Come on. We criticize John McAfee, but he never exit scam a spritz with anybody that I know. So,
we should reach out to McAfee to ask if he wants to sponsor the show. He can be anonymous. We already have anonymous sponsors, so if he wants to be anonymous.
That's great.
But that's a great I don't thing. Think he wants to be anonymous. I don't think he ever did anything anonymously.
But would we accept him non-anonymously?
I would change the name of the show to McAfee Internet Security Review if he wants.
No, he's out of the business.
Yeah, I know.
Now he's in the business of fucking whales.
Yeah.
Now he's John McAfee whale fucker. You know, he's whales.
No, I thought he was trying to become president.
But also, in the meantime, fucking whales.
It's really not something that should be mentioned, I think, Pedro. Because who cares what he chooses to fuck? It's unrelated to his future presidency.
Yeah, this is gossip.
You need
You're
to
right.
be more really, open-minded.
Yeah, it was it's really low. Sorry.
No, it's true, though.
Well, and also, I mean, love is love.
Right.
Love wins. You love a whale, you love a kangaroo, love wins. So, yeah, that was low for me. Sorry.
Probably the lowest moment of the show. But yeah.
No, I think
for now, for now.
You guys are doing a great job to make it difficult.
The lowest insult or, you know, activity, and I was gonna say no, but then you said no. Anyway,
so and in case that would be the lowest moment of the show so far, but I think you guys are promising, so you can do better.
We'll get there. What's your cardinality right now, by the way? Because I remember you were 11 people in the past. Are you?
No. 7. I don't think. I mean, this is strong accusation. Yeah, I've never been more than 7. So I reject that. I want to tell this officially. I've never been more than 7 tall black women in my life. 7 is where I draw the line.
They just dismember you. I dismembered you now. Misnumbered you?
Is that 7? 7 Pedros?
No, actually, when I am...
Pedras.
I need a Mexican female name, probably like Rosita or something like that. I'm 7 Rosita. Rositas, because it's plural.
So isn't that confusing when you try to educate in your podcast?
Not at all, because we enter, we can split. 4 of us enter one pub, 3 of us enter the other pub, and we can educate people, and it's perfect.
I like the symmetry.
No, this is great. This is a great.
Bit OCD, and I notice these things, you know.
Okay, so 3 one pub, 3 the other pub, and the other is throwing up in the street outside, and we turn over.
Nice. You have a hot over.
But do you pay for like 7 flight tickets when you fly abroad?
No, I think it's all about personalities.
Exactly.
I see. So it's not like the physical manifestation. It's who you are inside your 7 people.
No. If you have a strong enough personality, they give you flight tickets for free. That's what it's saying.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. You have to choose your personality and then you don't pay 7.
Okay.
Now I see why I always pay for flights. Now I understand.
That wasn't my first idea.
Your personality is terrible. I mean, you don't like blockchains. You're so boring.
Because there's more than one blockchain.
Multiple blockchains. I sometimes they tell me to ask to pay for like 5 tickets when I go alone, and then they don't let me in. So yeah,
exactly.
That's how bad my personality is.
The guy who does blockchains, throw it out. Yeah. Well, at least they do that before taking off. I mean, it would be worse.
I was in a talk recently, because if we're talking about planes and blockchain, so I was in a talk where someone from Microsoft said that blockchain can save planes from crashing. You had an explanation.
Do you mind to report the explanation?
I can't. I physically can't. I mean, I don't. He could explain. He explained it. I was convinced. I said they're convinced. And I was proud too, because you know I was there in this very important moment.
Did it happen before or after the you know, in the 1995 there was the speech known as the tidal wave speech, in which Bill Gates switched the narrative from "we will create our internet" to "we will be a gateway to internet." So it's very renowned as the tidal wave speech. And Microsoft is apparently going down the same road again with Bitcoin. So until yesterday, there was the Azure blockchain as a service, and now they are doing apparently stuff on Bitcoin. Oh, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know how.
Do we want to open this? If we open this, I'm gonna troll this now.
We want to open the Microsoft.
Yeah. No, I don't know why everyone's so excited about Microsoft doing a Bitcoin thing. It's just, I don't know, it's something about identity. And they basically, I think they're basically hashing data and that's it. So.
Isn't that time stamping?
It's like time stamping, except they don't care about the time element. So it's not even absolutely clear why the time is there. I guess, you know what? I guess if you want to be like very strict about it, then there's something to be said about being able to revoke an identity. So if you have a blockchain, you can prove in the future that you revoked an identity if it's on Bitcoin. But I doubt that people are going to care about this.
Well, I mean, if you think about the Craig Wright situation, having PGP servers with a neutral, not manipulable timestamps could be, could be a use case, especially during controversies. You have the Internet Archive, which is timestamped, and you can have a PGP registration and revocation with a timestamp. That's not bad. I don't know if they're doing that.
It's useful once in a decade when some idiot tries to claim that he's a Satoshi, but it happens once in a decade. And we know that he's not Satoshi even without it. You know, we don't need Bitcoin to tell us that.
I think open timestamping is a great addition to Web of Trust. It just improves GPG in exactly what you said, but I think a few other things as well. In general, there's some metadata that can be changed or updated, and you wouldn't know better. If you didn't anchor it anywhere. So
we're open-minded. Microsoft now. No, that's okay.
No,
but which Microsoft?
Right. That's a very good question, because there is there is Microsoft. They are in Naples, southern Italy, and they are a great software house, and they are just the same. Just they don't actually give you software; they give you stones in these packages. But I mean, this is a different strategy. This is a matter of a technical divergence of opinion.
So if you really want my honest opinion, I haven't
yes.
enough about it to really have a say one way or another. But I'm glad they're doing things on Bitcoin. I hope they're doing it in the right way. If they're not, I hope they're going to listen to feedback. And that's all I have to say.
Can we be happy?
No.
Not because of the thing... No, can we be happy? No. Okay, thank you. Maybe we can read this not as a technical news, which isn't, but just as a consequence of an incoming change in narrative. So now we can say that doing stuff on Bitcoin, which is the only stuff already still here after 10 years, is cool in technical, in pseudo-technical environments. While 2 years ago, saying we are doing stuff on Bitcoin was a minus, not a plus. So there is at least a change in narrative.
You mean blockchain, not Bitcoin thing?
In this case, it's Bitcoin.
I just heard the guy saying that thing again yesterday. I was like, what is this, 2014, 15 again? Yeah, no. Okay, fair enough. That's a reasonable point.
In Italy or abroad? Because in
it was on Twitter.
On Twitter, okay.
He was... there's now dumbest tweet of the day thing.
Yeah, great account.
Oh, really?
Follow that.
Yeah.
Why am I not starring the account?
I think it's a fork of Scam Central.
Oh, yeah. Right. I know what you are talking about. Yeah.
No,
I think it's public. Yeah, I'm joking.
Yeah.
Great account. Great guy.
I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope so.
I mean, not
that I'm
Well, we revealed that Pedro is Giacomo, so it's a day of revelation.
Yeah, but I didn't sign it. Yeah, I wanted to sign my keys, but then I realized I can't. Sorry, I will never appear in front of a camera or a microphone again,
ever,
forever. I promise. Yeah,
yes.
Forever.
I'm gonna use the soundbite. I promise.
Yeah, it works much to keep Craig accountable. So yeah, people is really serious about keeping people accountable.
People are really serious about taking your words out of context. That's for sure.
That's a very
promising field.
That's not what you said, and you corrected yourself.
Exactly. Yeah,
and
it was just a miscommunication.
Yes, miscommunication.
You should get unblocked. Really.
People blocking each other, it's really terrible. It's really terrible. I think I have a right, to not be blocked by anyone. I have a right to have people address me when I want.
Yeah, exactly.
So
No. I think a few weeks ago or a month ago I went on a blocky spree.
You went on a blocking spree? You can just mute.
Yes.
Is terrible, because if you mute, people will interact on your timeline and you will not even know.
No, I just mute the friends that talk too much.
Yeah. Muting. I use mute for conversation and for boring but non-malicious conversation. So Loris mutes me, but I don't mute people who are malicious or spamming, because in that case they can spam and scam on your timeline without you even noticing.
If I'm muting you, you should be honored, because I'm not blocking you or unfollowing you.
I see. I think most of my followers mute me. Probably. That's the best strategy. That's the best way to...
All your 20,000 fake followers.
Yeah, I don't think these fake guys that you purchased by a fake following services... That
Listen, I didn't purchase them. They came for free. It's not... It really happened, though. It's a true story. It's really happened.
How did it work? They offered you a trial and you didn't pay?
Something like that. Something. No, they just. I don't know. It just happened. Someday, I got like a billion notifications of new followers who are obviously fake, because all of their names were like just numbers, and they were all tweeting like porn stuff. So they were obviously not real people. But
or you're not interesting for technical stuff. Or you're more interesting for this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should consider to. I mean, already you go in television and you have like
fully clothed
presenters. Fully clothed for now, but
fully haired.
And fully haired, right?
I like it.
But there are anchor women flirting with him live.
Even men, I saw it.
Oh, anchor men?
Yes,
oh.
Like myself.
Yeah, that's true.
Everybody flirts with you except for
Wales.
Even Wales, but not Nuriel.
Oh, I wish I could get him to unblock me. I really deserve his attention, you know? And I tried. Listen, I really tried. There was the flower that I offered on TV, and I had this joke where he retweeted me. He retweeted me at least a couple of times. And then blocked me again. So he unblocks me, retweets something that I say because it was anti-shitcoins, and then he immediately blocks me again. So he doesn't see the thing that he retweeted. So then I changed my name, my Twitter name, because it shows up on his profile. So I changed it. No, I changed it back, but I changed it in the past to Nuriel is a no coiner, and it showed up in the top of his timeline. So it was cool. But it didn't help. It didn't unblock me. It never helps.
What were you expecting? I mean, come on.
You're the definition of a stalker right now.
I'm open about it. And it should be flattering to him, I think. I really care about him.
Thinking about yourself a little bit.
I'm thinking about myself. I'm thinking about him very highly. I just want some attention.
No, really. He's from Italy, no?
He lives in Italy.
I don't know, not... because the maybe. Surname, somebody pronounced the surname like a French style with the accent of the last I, so like Rubini, but maybe if it was from Italy, it would be Rubini.
Well, I'm just saying.
Maybe.
I have this recollection. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, well, we will dig into this. If it's from Italy, then we can probably provide some help.
He was employed in the Bank of Israel. I'm not stalking. I'm just reading on Wikipedia.
Search his name in Italy and see if you see anything.
No, yeah. There's a lot in Italy. Exactly. He lives in Italy, yeah. He lives in Italy.
Right.
Ah.
Well, that's not nothing.
Yeah. Okay, we have a lead. I think we can arrange something.
I don't want him to follow me maybe. Just to unblock me. I will be... And acknowledge my love.
we know what you want for real.
This is not the right show. Need to know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can't blame me, really. Yeah. Look at him.
No, I personally can't. He has a strong personality.
Charisma.
Yeah. He probably get entire empty planes when he flies just for free.
Yeah.
I like 5, like you do.
Yeah.
Or 7 or whatever.
I'm learning from him. Fine.
Oh, my God. This is terrible. Let's do some news. Let's do some...
Okay, something happened.
Things that happened. So one thing that happened is that Coinbase bought... No, it didn't buy. But there are rumors that they want to buy Xapo.
Is this... Coinbase contending Sapo to yeah. someone else. There are like two contenders, right?
But they're only selling the business. Institution.
I mean, is there anything else?
Well,
let's be honest.
The retail part, I think, is not developed very much. And I know for a fact that the custodianship for institutional was going pretty well in Switzerland. So probably that's the core of the company right now.
You know better than me on this.
I said core. So now it's also the cash of the company, not just the core. It's the connector of the company, exactly.
Yes.
And I think that could be a pity because the CEO of Sapo is the only 2Xer who actually did apologize. Which for our toxic maximalist, having one guy apologizing is like it's like the best. So he's the role model for every other scammer and individual copy from him. And now, if he gets acquired by Armstrong, that's diluted away. That would be bad.
Yeah, I guess. What Zappo clients think about this, because they probably have some very big clients, I would assume.
I don't think very, very big. I think that most of all they are small banks. But I don't want to disclose anything detailed. Of course, it's more than it could be more than Coinbase actually, because they are small clients, but in institutional, not retail. So I don't know. It could be comparable, maybe an order of magnitude or less. I don't know.
Yeah. So is this good for us or bad for us, or do we not care?
I think it's slightly bad if it's finalized. It's not yet finalized, right?
Not that I know. No, I think the news that came out were just about rumors.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be finalized in like an hour the announcement. In theory.
Nice.
Wasn't it the block that leaked it?
I think so. They have a lot of good stories lately. I think maybe Pedro can help them.
Yeah, I never interacted directly with Sapo, but I was consistently an opponent to Sapo in a way, because when I was consulting banks for Bitcoin custodianship for their retail clients, there were two visions fighting. One vision was my vision. The original Pedro vision, that was you're a bank, you're paid to keep safe the assets of your clients, so you have to learn how to do multi-sig solutions internally. And the other view was this is very sophisticated, this is new, so you need to outsource it to a startup which is specialized, which I think is a terrible idea. I mean, having, 100 Swiss banks outsourcing custodianship of Bitcoin to one single startup which is not insured as a bank, is not as reputable as a bank. I think that's a very fragile model. Of course, it's a convenient model because they don't want responsibility. So many of my clients were begging for me for doing custodianship for them instead of just consultancy.
Yeah. Right, but wait, there's two dimensions here. One is, the quality of a bank or what, but the other one is decentralization, and it's better, or distribution. It's better to have many entities holding some bitcoins than all bitcoins in one entity, regardless of how good that entity is.
Yeah.
Simply because of government issues and limitations.
Yeah, I think there is a trade-off between local and global incentives. Globally, it's clear that it's better to have 100 banks keeping Bitcoin with different storage solution politically from a cybersecurity point of view. But locally, for them, they are very tempted to share the risk with others and to externalize the risk. It's scary for a single bank to be. The point is that with a decentralized solution, you will have many small fuck ups, and with a centralized solution, you will have a very rare, once every 10 years, very rare big giant fuck ups. So the former scenario is better, but the second, the latter is very tempting for for people that is facing the fuck up directly.
Yep. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in charge of a fuck up like this. It's not fun.
So, Woody, if you had to go to a bank, would you go to a small bank or a big bank?
Do I go there to rob the bank? Why am I going?
No. let's say you don't know how to hold your own coins.
Yes.
So you want them to hold. Do you go to one holding tons of it or one, you know, holding?
I split them between a lot of banks.
Right.
That's probably what I'm going to do. But
I think that's a deformation of your, your non-financial but technical education background. I'm not sure that that's what many, even well-educated and successful investors are doing right now. They are diversificating in terms of the kind of asset, but I don't think they really diversificate in terms of counterparty risk so much.
Come on, they must have different supply chains in case one has a flood. You know, like when hard drives had floods.
No, yeah, it's reasonable.
Or RAM had issues or whatever. Like if you're doing something, you probably need backup options. And if you're holding Bitcoin, it's probably good to split the risk across. Like when you have insurance, you probably prefer to get insured by 10 different insurances, 10% each.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. People with insurance probably they diversificate the counterparty risk. But then with custodianship, I mean, maybe I'm speaking nonsense. But I think I had the perception that many well-educated and very big institutions are concentrating counterparty risk very much.
What about gold? Like we're all talking about. Yeah. I have no clue here. I'm no golder.
I think that they tend to use a very small number, if not many investors tend to use a single simplified counterparty for gold.
But with gold, there's a higher friction for small amounts.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good point.
Like splitting it increases the cost. Not linearly, I think.
Yeah.
But still, if you're a very high net worth individual, like I was never a billionaire, but if you're a billionaire, like our anonymous sponsor.
Yeah, good second. You lost all your billions in a tragic boating accident.
But,
we know.
But no, our sponsor is a billionaire. I can't be a billionaire. This will offend our sponsor. But someone is a billionaire. How can you know? No bitcoins, right? It's all like stocks and dollars and stuff, and I don't know, and apartments. So I'm sure they wouldn't hold all their liquid cash in the same place.
You want to put the apartments on the blockchain, Woody? You want to put the apartments on the blockchain?
Don't say have a solution for that. Please, come on. This is not a blockchain podcast. This is a cannabis podcast.
Okay. What about sidechain?
Even more.
Plasma. I want the plasma. Hey.
It's more efficient.
Yeah. So.
Serious question. I don't know if you follow scam projects, but did any of those second layer problem on Ethereum ever deliver something?
Actually, someone just tweeted that there's a more efficient way.
Use your words.
I saw a tweet about something in Bitcoin more efficiently, which I think came from Plasma.
So we could copy something from Plasma for real. Well, statistically, they produce so much bullshit every day that statistically it would be anomalous
A lot of Plasma stuff was just copied from... Who was it that told me this? I don't remember who it was. It was said in a friendly way that a lot of development on protocols in the space is mostly arbitrage. You know, you take...
But a lot of this is borrowing, right? So... Like adding on top of someone else's discovery.
Also, there is the element of Joseph.
Joseph Poon.
Joseph Poon moved there to work on the stuff. So I guess that he moved some of his stuff previous.
Makes
code,
sense, right? You reapply some of the ideas and improve upon them if you can.
But so, what's the difference between Raiden and Plasma? Like Plasma was.
I think you're on the wrong show.
Good point.
Larry, Larry, we're all learning. We're open-minded, and Pedro is educating, and
exactly.
He's trying to learn.
I'm trying to learn and to educate the people in the real world, the one we are disconnected from.
The pub.
The pub, yeah, the pub.
I'm not always disconnected from the pub.
That's correct.
I'm a fan.
Yeah. You're right. You're between the two worlds, the pub world and the Bitcoin world.
And the family world. That's what kind of reduced my pub time to one third.
But is one third enough to attack the chain?
To attack the chain, let me think. It's more or less than 51%.
Yeah, but if you have selfish mining, then one third is enough.
How can you ask me about 51? 51 is an uncountable number.
Yeah, that's true. It should be a 200% attack. That's much easier to understand and comprehend.
Plus one, I think.
Plus 1%.
To be on the safe side.
Well, when I was getting my degree in theoretical physics, everybody was mocking me because seriously, if I see any kind of equation with more than one E, P, and two used, I close my brain immediately. I really hate numbers. I really hate numbers. Yeah, I always use analytical variables.
In your flat Earth studies.
Do you know what he's talking about?
Okay, this show became a little bit too much intimistic, sorry.
Is it like computer variables or...
I don't know what. I have no idea what he just said.
Like alpha or phi, you know, the functions. Phi. I can tolerate
the
three
thing
names
about
of
Bitcoiners
functions.
Who have other fields of interest is... I'm very against that. I think... if you're in Bitcoin, you should only have Bitcoin in your life, nothing else. That's the true maximalism.
Because not enough time, not because of other reasons.
It's also about purism of heart.
Everything which is not Bitcoin is a scam. Remember my slide. So, like, physics is a scam and pizza is a scam.
No.
Pizza is obviously a scam. That's unrelated to Bitcoin.
Watch it. I'm Mexican, but I have some Italian friends.
Yeah. Pizza is very popular in London.
I don't know. I want to learn some electronics, maybe some woodworking, some laser cutting, some, you know, I want to build
fine,
some RC cars.
It's no, fine. Being a scammer is okay. Just embrace it.
Yeah. Be more like Fluffy.
Okay. I'm a bit of a shit.
You know.
Well, I think you already exposed it in your show. But when I met Lawrence, I was a full shit coiner. We met in Milan, and I was talking about Ripple and watch it.
Well,
NXT.
I'm very happy that you bring it up because actually we didn't expose it on the show. You just exposed it just now. We talked about your shilling of Coinbase links, I think, if I remember. But it's great. It's great to hear that you're also a Ripple shitcoiner.
Yeah, but the shilling of Coinbase links was to make
in order
more
to buy
Bitcoin.
NXT.
Yeah. And in a way, but it wasn't completely immoral.
No, it was moral. People knew that I was just I was taking money out of Coinbase to redistribute it to Bitcoin.
Yeah,
so
you're right, but
immoral?
You're changing the subject. I want to talk about NXT.
NXT and Ripple, his ex Ripple Army.
I am Ripple Army. Yeah, actually, I was not really interested in Ripple, but then there was Amsterdam Bitcoin Conference 2014. I was there with Lawrence, and this Ripple stand, they had these biscuits like a waffle something, but they, like with honey and caramel.
Are you sure they weren't magic biscuits?
Yeah, but I don't know the content because it was Amsterdam. But I assure you that after I tasted it, I really loved Ripple for at least 2 days.
2 days because some biscuits.
Because of the... Yeah, but it was not just biscuits. They were biscuits with tokens. So they gave me a token for free. It was like an airdrop. And I had to move the token from my wallet to the other wallet of the guy on the waffle bar. And he was giving me a waffle in return. So basically, I mean, today you can do that with confidential assets, of course. But back then, that was That was science fiction.
Vinny Lingam's vending machines.
It was
exactly.
No. So it was a utility token for waffles.
Exactly.
Was it 1-to-1? Was there an exchange ratio?
No, and indeed I. So
what about front running?
No, the other problem is food, because the problem is that basically moving around Ripple assets back then, you were basically sometimes losing fractions of the asset itself instead of XRP. There was some kind of mess in which with Rippling you were like leaving crumbles of waffles around, which was very interesting as a dynamic.
So there was a trace. Is there like KYC ML equivalent?
Yeah, know your waffles. KYW.
Let's go back to what we said earlier, that before you met me, you were a shitcoiner, you said, and that I'm your daddy, and that I'm your basically master.
I would love to deny this, but I can't. Lawrence had this damn attitude to actually think about things in actual technical reality. I was full of dreams about violating laws of physics and economics. And he destroyed all my dreams in a few days.
It's to my defense, it's only because others destroyed mine first, and I had to retaliate.
So it's like vampires. Who is the original dream destroyer?
Well, basically, Bitcoin Talk, IRC, and a bit of Reddit. Every time I said something, was incomplete or incorrect, someone will correct me and I'll learn more.
They were all sock puppets of Gregory Maxwell, I'm sure.
Probably. there's like seven of them.
Obviously sock puppets of Greg Maxwell. I know, if I'm not seeing you, right? I'm sitting here, I can't see you. So obviously you're Greg Maxwell.
Yeah, but deep fakes, even if you can see us, now we are in the deep fake age. So,
have you noticed we never talk at the same time?
Wait, Giacomo, say something in Larry's voice, and then we will know that you confused each other.
Okay, what do you want me to say?
Say something about 2 being a better number than 3.
2 is a much better number than 3, but I don't know what 3 is. I only know 2. Yeah. What is 3?
This was my impersonation. It was perfect. Like, I'm a master. I know.
Sometimes when I get close to do both at the same time, I'm a bit of a ventriloquist in that sense.
So if there are any listeners right now, really think about it. You are just listening, Greg Maxwell, pretending to be 3 different people on a show. He's talking with himself. That's super creepy.
I think the hardest part for me was to learn the Israeli. It's just the hardest. The Italians twice.
Yeah, because I could reuse the Italian accent for 2 characters, but the Israeli accent is only useful for 1.
You get it. Sure. I think you're getting it.
Yeah. Even Why Sacha Baron Cohen,
change. I'm getting it.
Yeah, but we need to make our audience laugh a bit.
Yeah, but even the audience.
So actually, all of the listeners are also Greg Maxwell.
Well, this is very like Philip K. Dick.
As I said at the beginning of the show, this is for fun, right? And we're all having fun.
I am all having fun. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a very sad segment. Imagine if my mom is listening to this now. She will obviously finally understand that I'm crazy.
Yeah, but your mom is just a Greg Maxwell sock puppet. I think I just pronounced the worst your mommy insult ever.
I don't think the worst.
Probably the worst. Okay, this is the lowest part of the show. Okay.
Well, it came. It finally came. It finally came.
It escalated quickly.
I don't think the show is finished yet. And I think Giacomo did all the trip all the way. We may as well make it longer.
2x.
No, 2x is too much.
Okay.
75%.
Anyway, 2x with off by 1 mistake. So back to 1.
So have you heard about SegWit 3x? The gang is getting back together.
Ah, yeah, right.
Well, they said it as a joke. Well, is it?
First, you know, it was Greg Maxwell saying it is a joke. That.
So he has a strange sense of humor. So who knows? Okay. This is very reassuring. No, but there is, I mean, I'm concerned there is, we started to create a little bit of fight, Twitter fight with the organizers of the Bitcoin 2019 conference. I think it's not really an intention of the organizer, but the effect was to give back a virginity to a lot of 2X participants, a lot of them, like Jian Wu, Eric Voorhees, and people from Abra, people from Bitflyer, all the people that signed the agreement. So there is an attempt to whitewash a little bit here.
Yeah,
I guess.
Maybe.
But so you're saying Bitcoin Magazine is at fault?
No, I'm not saying that. I mean, they also invited me.
Because they're neutral, they want to hear all
if
the
not
sides.
Organized, they're just learning. Bitcoin Magazine recently was amazing. The choice to get back to Bitcoin was a choice that I think, I mean, as a social structure, as a social layer, we are giving a lot of shit to scammers, but I'm okay with giving some free passes to people trying to do the right thing. This is like a difference between me and Lawrence. Like when there is somebody doing something ideologically very nice, even if they are completely incompetent, I tend to encourage them. While Lawrence like to be more objective about that.
I was going to say that, you know, among all the conferences and among all the Bitcoin publications, I think Bitcoin Magazine stands at the top. Now, and as you say, we ought to encourage good behavior. That being said, the worst was Eric. Eric was just, what the hell? What is he talking about?
Yeah, nothing happened.
You know, it was a proposal. It wasn't a proposal. It was, this is what we're doing. And Stephen Pair as well, he was very aggressive, very imposing. I was on a call where he was basically pushing around everyone and not really letting people talk. And in general, being aggressive. This is happening no matter what. So just take it. And it felt like really odd. I never thought, I mean, like out of this world. And you know, I was like, no, this is not happening. It's not like that. You know, it's not how it works. It's and you know, maybe we can spare some moments to talk about you know, sure, openness and everyone can make a proposal, but then you don't impose your proposal, right?
Well, also it's crazy that people is selling as conspiracy theorist stuff that was actually publicly said in mailing lists, like the fact that they wanted to fire core developers, the fact that they wanted to take advantage of SPV users. This is not a theory. This is what they were saying inside the Slack channel and the mailing list. I don't remember if it was explicitly. Yeah, we will win because we will basically fool SPVs. And the goal of this operation is to fire core developers.
Yeah, we got the majority of wallets, blah, blah, blah. We're big, we're Bitcoin. And, you know, you're not Bitcoin. You're just part of the ecosystem as everyone else. What was worrying was that they were close to, you know, a large size of the economic activity. But I don't think, you know, the good part is that a lot of the economic activity was also very against it. And in general, I always believe that, you know, between doing something and not doing something, you stay on not doing something if there's such disagreement.
Do you guys agree that Bitfinex futures were a great component of them realizing they already have lost?
Sounds likely.
There's an element of it, but then again, I'm not a trader. I heard and... I don't know to what extent that they really got scared of Luke because of how convinced he was and because how certain things were, which could be, you know. Luke did a lot of work for mining and in general, you know, mining software and firmware integrations and in general has been a Bitcoin core contributor for a long time. He has Bitcoin Not, which used to be called Bitcoin Next, I believe, which is basically the, you know, the next
Bitcoin
release.
Next. thanks.
that's a good one. So yeah, you know, Luke has respect, and with respect comes some influence, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there could be a lot of reasons. I mean, but if I think in the end of the day, if you were if you're not one of the small businesses who, you know, some of the businesses on that list didn't really matter at all, but if you're one of the bigger ones, like miners or like a big exchange, and you see that the Bitcoin price is rising and everyone's interest is rising, then maybe it's just that isn't the good time to risk it, you know? But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what.
That maybe, too.
Yeah.
Multiple components for sure.
Well, the if it's at least one part of the reasons of the victory, the interesting thing is that it changes your evaluation of selling scam coin futures. Being, I mean, it's a good thing that when there is some kind of scam coin promotion like Bcash to or Bitcoin to X to sell futures about that. So in a way, scam coin gambling can be useful at least to define. I mean, if there is a selling pressure for shit, it's in a way good that we know that there is. So this could be a justification for being shitcoin exchanges.
But isn't it immoral to send to sell a shitcoin because you're selling it to someone?
We went through that. We went through that. Look, the moment you give fiat to someone, isn't that immoral, et cetera, et cetera. So no. Right?
But I'm trying to make a joke for our new listeners. There are new listeners who didn't listen to episode one. I can see in the statistics. We follow everyone, by the way.
We drones.
Yeah. Well, we follow Greg.
Look outside your window now.
So, or he follows us. But so it's which one is worse, altcoins or fiat?
Probably altcoins.
Altcoins.
Yeah. No, I don't know. No, I'm not sure. No, I'm not sure about that. They're not worse. They're tiny.
Not all of them.
They could become worse. Huh. Who knows?
Yeah.
Well, they're both knowingly evil. No, sorry, wait. Not all altcoins are, right? I would argue some altcoins are truly trying to do something different. Some are fake. Some are... Sorry?
They're just trying to
Edge exactly. daily that, interest. That's something...
That's a legit experiment.
Yeah, exactly. That's legit. Do you want to stop evolution and innovation? Are you an anti-innovation guy?
I told
you
I'm an open maximalist. Open mind. Yeah, sorry. I always forget.
We're open-minded, but we're very serious and maximalist about being open-minded.
We as Greg or we as individuals?
As Greg. It's very confusing to be Greg.
You know, yeah, this is the thing in many debates. Many open-minded are extremely toxic and aggressive about being open-minded. I mean, there is this strange second-order logic thing in which you can be... it's like when I'm politically correct. I'm so politically correct, then I will behave with my ideological enemies in a way that I will never condone in other situations. So, you know, intolerance with intolerance, this kind of bullshit. Yeah, I'm very philosophical tonight. Sorry, guys. Probably I need to drink some.
Oh, you're a drinker.
Would you like some water?
Of course.
No, just water, of course, and some tequila and, yeah.
We have three options, coffee, water, and spumante.
Spumante, of course. Okay. That's the spumante.
But then I would argue after the episode, we just go to get a
spot. Be careful, because okay. He's probably going to exit scam you.
So that's why he's going first this time.
This is like a scam chain. So the Canadian Craig Wright did it to him. He will do it to me, and then I will find my next.
This
victim.
Is good.
Yeah,
Canadian Craig Wright. Can I be the Israeli Craig Wright? No, because we only want two. We can't have three of anything.
No,
the maximum is two.
Okay, you're learning. So I'm learning, but you're learning too.
I have one more news item.
But
it just happened.
Oh, yeah?
a few moments before we started recording, and it's not a big surprise. And just saying, it's probably, we're probably publishing this like 2.5 years after the recording, so maybe it seems out of date. But I'm talking about the ETF being postponed once again. Bitcoin is dead. Bitcoin is dead.
I actually didn't know
that there was a decision to be made. I forgot, but apparently some people are very excited about it being postponed again. I don't know. Do we care?
Is the price reacting?
I don't know. Let me check. Wait a minute. It's still one Bitcoin. One Bitcoin.
Nice.
Sometimes I'm terrorized and wake up. And someone set the price of one Bitcoin to zero Bitcoin.
Oh, no, that would be terrible. Like in Rick and Morty.
Exactly. It's like a nightmare, recurring nightmare.
Yeah. So, okay. So we don't care. That's what you're saying, basically. Are you buying the ETF?
For now. Will you buy the ETF?
No. Who's going to buy it? Seriously, who's going to buy it?
Institutional,
yeah. Many of my clients that I try to make custody Bitcoins directly, they will be more than happy to drop the physical Bitcoins and to get ETFs.
Why not buy physical Bitcoins and give them to Coinbase custody or something?
That's in a way, that's even worse. I mean, I think that if you don't want to manage your security internally, which is a terrible decision for a bank, then you don't really want to buy Bitcoin in order to give them to support Coinbase. You want to buy ETF. Since your security model is just trust, it's a more honest and direct way to explicit that security model when you buy ETF. I will prefer ETF over a fake custodianship, which is physically externalized to a Bitcoin.
But if you really do not want to do your own internal custodianship, what you should do is split the risk across Coinbase, Xapo, right, and whatnot.
Yeah.
And then they all get acquired by the same thing, and yeah.
But at least you have some friction to attack. Yeah, you're right.
You have
diversification.
You have to keep watching. If they merge, your risk is not so diversified. Yeah, like I was reading, FDIC insurance, UDI. So it's like some bank accounts are protected up to a certain amount. I'm not sure if it's 80,000 or 150,000, and it's certainly country dependent. In UK is different. In Europe is different, and it's about per account, per banking institution. Or per banking license, I'm not even sure. But one friend told me once, someone that had some cash, because it wasn't really a problem for me at the time. When I was living in the UK, I was just learning as much as I could about the banking system. And basically, you really have to be careful splitting the money if you have more than the amount to save,
right,
to insure across different institutions. And if they merge, then you have to be careful that they didn't also, maybe sell one license and keep one of them or whatever. Because then, you're only insured up to the minimum. That's it.
Yeah.
Once.
Yeah, probably. Institution will eventually, it's not probably always true that the good bad practice in legacy systems is transported to Bitcoin as is, because the point is that the guy in the bank doing the legacy assets, he will be a asset risk evaluation expert and the counterparty risk expert, while the new guy managing Bitcoin maybe is the innovation guy, the POC guy. They give it, or the IT, which is not skilled to diversificate risk of.
Well, as long as we're talking about policies and banks and Bitcoin, there's the rumors of the new. Well, there was the recommendation by the FICTA, I think, for enforcing travel rule on Bitcoin transactions between exchanges. So let's say an exchange has to, you want to withdraw from an exchange, so you have to say what the address you're sending it to is. Like, you're on Bitfinex and you're withdrawing to Coinbase. So you have to say, this is going to my account on Coinbase, and they have to tell Coinbase who you are, and et cetera.
So, but that basically cannot be transferred on chain, because I mean, you have to prove that you own that address, and then after that, everything you do, included sending it to the coin join.
I mean, it's not very different from what it is now, but it would be more, you know, enforced, explicit. Yeah,
explicit. It's whitelisting, basically, deposit and withdrawal whitelisting, which is not really meaningful. I mean, you cannot even really enforce that. Imagine that on Bitcoin, I tell you that you really have to own the receiving address, and I do own it, and then they can make me sign something that says that I cannot transfer to anybody else which is not whitelisted. But if you assume some kind of strong fungibility function, like your address being already a multisig address that you cannot, which is NOR, that you cannot distinguish. I mean, we can mitigate this kind of problem a lot.
I don't think so.
That you cannot mitigate.
No, this sucks. This is, a small circle of, close circle of whitelisting. If it grows, it's terrible for Bitcoin's fungibility. I mean, those coins are better
they're worse.
Well,
because they can, you can turn around them across exchanges, but the likeliness that somebody else in a real market will adopt that is basically zero, because there is no difference between a whitelisted coin and a USD dollar on PayPal.
Better or worse is in the eyes of how successful this initiative is, and in the eyes of the user, right? It depends on on, you know, what they need to do with those funds. And but in general, I'm completely against such a thing. It makes, it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, the thing is how to stop it. It's a very difficult.
They're already doing
to stop.
KYC AML on the up ramp and down ramps, which is a little bit extreme.
Yeah, and the problem is that we will need a kind of that's very futuristic address in which they cannot really check if I'm using it to spend again or not. For example, with confidential transaction. But they know if you spend.
Well, they can just say, you know, you're not allowed to use confidential transactions, and if you used it, so you have to explain why.
Yeah, and probably we should make Bitcoin a way that the only way to not use fungibility function is not to use Bitcoin at all.
But clearly, if you're looking at a federation which is by definition less, you know, less.
Decentralized, and yes,
It's not decentralized. It's more like distributed federation, the federation I have in mind. But what I'm trying to say is, I wouldn't even start there. I would just look at Bitcoin. If I'm really talking about fungibility and the ability of sending coins anywhere.
For example, if a very common wallet was doing some kind of automatic, I don't know where I'm going. What I'm saying is that.
What I'm saying is, if we fail with Bitcoin, forget about the rest.
Sure. One interesting idea about a fungibility attack is, assume that there is, I mean, right now everybody says that Bitcoin is not fungible, but economically it is, because nobody is seeing markets for Bitcoin against Bitcoin. Anywhere.
Maybe
I mean, there is if anybody of you, but is there? Can you give me a market price OTC or on a website where there is a price of fresh Bitcoin against Bitcoin?
Some OTC desks probably can give you a price.
Or some miners directly, I don't know.
But what's your point? I don't think that, as a matter of fact, Bitcoin right now economically is showing any sign of lack of fungibility. I mean, in theory, we are rightly so concerned about fungibility. But right now, nobody has in mind any market where you can find a price of one kind of Bitcoin against the other. Except maybe for the Casasius coin, which is an interesting exception.
But couldn't you argue that the joint market, it's a price for for privacy.
Yeah. I'm not, I think that every transaction.
Or even Wasabi does that, right? Yeah. They charge. Right?
Actually, it's a great business model. Like the great business model in Bitcoin is to be paid to provide privacy. Many other ways to be paid in Bitcoin directly, they are detrimental to privacy, not helping. Like if you create fees inside your application or stuff like that. So it's a good thing. I mean, everything should be a conjoin. But this is what I'm saying. Including...
I would like that.
Yeah. Including, with Schnorr, arguably, that would be even more cost-effective with signature aggregation transaction level.
But when there's a proposal for that, I think...
Not even this one, the second...
It's going to be a different proposal.
Yeah, this one is aggregating signature at the input level. So if you have, for example, a multisig, that's better because you can only see one. I mean, you cannot distinguish a multisig from a
single. No. The multisig you can do.
Already with the.
Yeah, I'm talking about.
The conjoin, you can't. Yeah.
You know, among different.
Inputs. Yeah. Cross input, let's say. Cross input, you can. While inside the same input with a multisig, you can, and it's cool.
So I need to refresh. I haven't really, we read about this or discussed this for a while, maybe over years, but a year. But my understanding is that what you could do is provide one signature that proves that all the inputs were signed for without having the individual signatures.
Yeah.
And that's obviously more efficient because that's the only thing you need to store to prove that those transactions were valid. I don't know what else you can compress together, if any other field other than the signature. But this is already quite an interesting saving. It wasn't put in because we don't want to, there's research going on. And my understanding at the time was that this was still being evaluated against the other Schnorr properties and other features that we can have in V1, such as, things like normal key aggregation and whatnot.
Yeah, the other one messes with the...
interactive.
And it messes with the script validation more because then you have... here you're basically just checking a single sig. Everything else happens outside the validation.
Oh, yeah. As far as you know, you don't even know if it's single sig or multi-sig.
Exactly. While with transaction level cross-input signature aggregation, that's great for conjoin, but basically you have to change the way the script works in order to make a collective signature check. I don't know, but I guess it's messy.
Yeah, not that much. I mean, I think it's doable. It's worth it. I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, in terms of, it needs reviewing, it needs to be done well, but I don't think it's rocket science.
Well, it could be.
At this point.
We could think about probably, 2023. I mean, if we want to spit numbers, for example, V1, now we need a testnet implementation. We need people running it on testnet at least for, 6 months? Or is not? I mean, yeah, probably some months. And then you need the activation process to be planned. Then you need to start. Then you need the signaling. Then either the activation or the not activation.
So let's talk about signaling strategies. Do we... Yeah, and
can you please not curse in the podcast? It's a safe space.
Yes.
Oh yeah, but that was the cryptocurrency. One fact, two facts. There was a
cryptocurrency. No. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you being not open minded with
recreational activity? Yes.
Exactly.
The coin.
And I'm learning. Yeah, I don't know about educated. That, but I'm learning.
And the maximum number of bucks you can give is 2.
Exactly.
So, precisely. Yeah. What about signaling, Lorenz?
Okay, so we do it this way. We give them 3 months to signal readiness, and then after 7 months, it auto-activates anyway.
Ah, so this AXA evilness.
Yes. It's lizard coordinated when the leads are the synchronized.
Yeah. So then you need, you need every, the entire ecosystem to upgrade before that, because you're going to have a problem.
No, it's opt in.
You don't really need upgrade from the.
But they
users.
Need to enforce upon the miners that they actually execute the fork. Because that's like what flag deactivation is. The kind of the users kind of enforce that miners.
Okay. He's saying 7 months is not enough.
Okay.
I was kind of kidding when I said 7 months. You probably want something longer, more like, 18, 24.
How are you with just as a metric with the adoption of the patch for the inflation bug? I knew that Luke was saying that there was a very low rate of upgrade to that, which could be significant for this kind of delay, programmer delay.
Yeah.
Our fact checker right now is checking the number.
It's two.
There's no point in checking. We know what the number is. There are only two options.
Exactly.
The maximum.
Yeah, exactly. Two nodes are upgraded right now. So we need two more.
Well, but it's two out of two.
Two nodes
good.
To be ready. Yeah, yeah. It's great security.
Anyway, it's easy. They're all on the cloud and one click away and we upgrade them. Yes.
Right.
In Curia.
I have no idea.
You know what in Curia means in Italian, Udi?
I'm binging it right now.
Lack
of care.
Lack of care. But they are in Fura, yes. Not in Curia.
Yeah, but this is okay. The second version.
That was the joke. Oh, okay.
Yes.
Most of our listeners don't know what in Fura is. Because it's Greg Maxwell.
So what is it, Udi? True.
I have to tell you. What is it, Udi? Joke. Infura is this. Infura is Ethereum, basically. It's a server that operates as Ethereum.
Okay. Yeah. But to be honest, you know a lot more about Ethereum than I do. I know at least a couple of contracts. I know one. ERC20.
I compiled one.
So you know at least two.
Right.
And actually three because you made
what's
one.
Three?
Three? What is three?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Two and another.
Two and another. One was,
let's talk one about the first open. Two first, and later we can talk about another one. Maybe.
Okay, so I know about ERC20. Right. That's the one to make tokens.
Yeah, the kitties is they have another number right? For that. I think it's 721. It still has a two.
Whoa. Okay, I'm out. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good point.
About what? About Ethereum, more. Just generally?
Interesting smart contracts. Because I've been, you know, told at Consensus that I'm not entirely open-minded about different smart contracts than ERC-20. I'm only focusing on...
No, there are a lot of very interesting smart contracts. Very intriguing smart contracts. You know, all the rage right now in the Ethereum world is the DeFi, the DeFi thing. The decentralized finance, open finance.
Yeah, that's DeFi.
And they're basically lending each other dollars, and they're very excited about that. So they have collateral in Ethereum, in Ethers. And so you can give... Yeah.
Make a DAO. The MakerDAO.
It's not the DAO.
It's a DAO.
It's MakerDAO.
Well, you know, that's...
It's a coincidence that it uses the same name.
So what happens? What's the game theory?
So you put some... You have some Ethers, and you put your Ethers in a smart contract, of course, because everything is a smart contract. So you put your Ethers in a smart contract.
So everything... It's already a bad assumption. Like you have Ether, you put them in a contract. I have no Ether. I'm not going to put them in a contract.
Okay. Sorry, Udi, you can stop. We have the audio we wanted to cut and to publish out of context. So now you can stop.
Okay. Let's say for fiction purposes that I'm going to buy some Ethereum, put them in a smart contract.
The smart contract, then the smart contract creates DAI. DAI. It's a token.
I heard of it.
And you get the token.
Yeah.
And now you can use the token to redeem Ethers with the dollar value of the token. Now, if you're listening, what?
I had this idea on Bitcoin, by the way.
We did it as a POC, you remember, for a client.
Yeah.
3 years ago, we did together a POC, a proof of concept, for a banking client that was basically that. It was not decentralized. The Oracle was centralized, but it was broadcasting blind.
No, the oracles don't matter. The oracles don't matter in Ethereum.
Oh, because they are,
You can hand wave it away. It's not a problem. It's not centralized. It's
the market that decides the price.
No, the oracle is just I mean, you know, right now we have the oracles,
the oracle,
but we will decentralize
it. We can't decentralize everything together at the same time.
I want to hear the rest.
That's basically it. The problem is, you know, what happens if the collateral goes lower than, you know, because maybe the price of Ether goes down and the collateral isn't enough to back the DAIs.
It's 1 over the over collateralization coefficient. So if I put 1 Bitcoin and you put 1 Bitcoin,
Was Ethereum, not Bitcoin.
Oh, sorry.
Come on, confusing me.
If you put 1 Ether and I put 1 Ether, until the price of Ether doesn't goes less than half compared with the source of price that you are checking, like let's say US dollar, the source of stability. If you put 1 against 1, you have 100% over collateralization.
I'm not sure what the exact parameters are. Although 2 is a great number, but maybe it's not 2. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a perfect number. let's say it's 2, it's 5x. Who cares? There's a number. They picked a number. The number is the buffer that ETH can go down.
So there's some mitigation. So if it goes down, some people can buy your collateral. And then there's another magical token called Maker. And in an emergency, they allowed to create more makers and sell them on the market in order to kind of rescue the contracts that are underwater. So you need to hope that people will want to buy the new makers.
Save the market.
Yes.
So it is a decentralized central bank.
No, but wait. Those effectively are when ETH is crashing.
Right.
Those are supposed to go long.
That's the yes. Yeah.
So that's the expectation. We always have people going long versus people going short. The people getting the DAI are kind of going short.
Yeah, and if it goes short, right? if the price goes down too fast, then there's some hopefulness involved, some optimism involved in.
No, I mean, there is also technology. There is that technology in which basically this guy connects to a chat with exchanges and he says, okay, guys, can you stop trading? And that's a cool technology. I don't know the name, but we should do that in Bitcoin.
I heard this technology is more efficient than off by one.
But one of the nice things about it is how they figure out the price of ethers and dollars. So the way they do it is, we're not going to tell you how we do it. That's basically how. If you go to the documentation, that's very, very few words about that. And they have some number of permissioned accounts. I think it's like 15. And they're in charge of, saying what the price is. And no one knows who they are. They're not public. Their identity is a secret.
I think the actual sentences. The actual sentences in the white paper are
This is an educational process.
We don't really know what the press is. Exactly.
You know what I was hoping? That this was kind of calculated dynamically based on, you know, diving bought and diving sold on the atomic swaps or whatever.
Sounds like
and
you have an ICO.
I have ideas.
Well, that's the difference between being shitcoin executioner and a shitcoin idea man is a very important difference.
It subcontracts the execution to other people, basically. Yeah, every major ICO there is Lawrence behind it.
I don't see that.
I mean, they can hear the noise of the Lamborghini. You cannot hide it. Shut the mic.
Are you driving right now?
I knew I should.
Well, no. What do you think? We are poor people. There is the poor driving, not us. I mean,
in a Lambo. Come on.
We are crypto people.
You wouldn't have a driver in a Lambo.
Having,
would
buying
you?
A Lambo for your driver is
a Lambo. In the back of a Lambo is not the best experience.
Yeah, I mean, the driver is not inside the Lambo. He's driving outside because it's a poor
remote
guy. He's not a peasant. We don't want that kind of people of inside with crypto people.
Good vibes.
Well, do you tell your driver, oh, you should buy some BitConnect and then you won't have to be a driver anymore?
No. We try to stay open-minded, and I just tell him to listen to 1 hour of Carlos Matos and decide freely.
Yeah, you should hear to both.
Okay, guys, we're almost 2x of the standard size of an episode.
We cannot go over that.
Yeah.
That's a limit. So we could call it a day, but we have another 50 minutes.
But then we'll have to find out if we have off by 1 hour.
What is the maximum length of your show?
Oh, that's true. But also, what about the platform?
That can be a real problem.
That would be very nice.
We already lost half an episode.
Well, it was a quarter of an episode because
of sound.
It was only half of the tracks. Yeah.
Yes, important
it
tracks.
It was one of the top two most important tracks. Everything is about two.
Anyway, basically, I mean, the important things about Bitcoin are MakerDAO, BitConnect 2.0, and what's the guy, John McAfee.
Yeah.
So we covered the three big topics here.
Great.
I think we're good. We should ask
our
friends.
Yeah, click all the buttons. If you have a button,
on
your screen right now, click it. Just to be sure. You can never click a button too much. And subscribe. Follow Pedro McCormick on Twitter.
All of us. Follow all of us. And maybe block one of us. Randomly, stay open-minded.
Well, great. It was great having both of you. Thanks for coming to the Greg Maxwell Show. And we'll see you on the next GigaMeg or something. Bye, Greg.
Honor it. Bye, Greg.
Bye, Greg.